Late night lab lights, a quiet hum in the air, a vial of plasma, hope hanging on a prayer.
Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Hey, everyone.
So I want you to imagine you are sitting in a doctor's office. It's a high-stakes moment, right? You've just had a standard blood draw, and that little vial of your blood is being boxed up and shipped off to a laboratory to hunt for circulating cancer DNA.
Right, a liquid biopsy.
Exactly. And this test, it could dictate your entire treatment plan. So here is the million-dollar question. Do you get the exact same result no matter which lab that vial goes to?
I mean, it seems like a baseline assumption for modern healthcare, doesn't it? You would naturally expect uniform precision.
You would assume it's a simple yes, but the reality is completely shocking. Depending on the specific preparation and testing methods a laboratory happens to use, that exact same blood sample could yield completely different results.
Which means entirely different treatment options for you.
Yeah. Think about liquid biopsies, kind of like a baking challenge. If you give 16 different master chefs the exact same ingredients, you know, flour, sugar, eggs, but they all use different mixing bowls, different oven temperatures, and different methods for tasting the final product, you were going to get 16 completely different cakes.
That's a great way to put it.
So how could this level of variation change the way we treat cancer today?
Well, it is arguably one of the most pressing yet hidden vulnerabilities in modern oncology diagnostics. I mean, we have built an incredible medical infrastructure, but the plumbing connecting the pieces is surprisingly unstandardized.
Today, we celebrate the work of the Dutch Coin Consortium and the research team published in Clinical Chemistry in 2024. Who have advanced our understanding of circulating tumor DNA testing.
Yeah, their research really pulls back the curtain on the actual mechanics of diagnostic testing. It reveals just how much laboratory workflows influence the ultimate biological truth reported back to a clinician.
Okay, let's unpack this. We're looking at liquid biopsies, specifically the detection of circulating tumor DNA, or ctDNA, from blood plasma.
Right.
And for an audience that closely follows genomics, we already know the incredible promise here, right? Tracking minimal residual disease, identifying resistance mechanisms.
Or screening for early stage malignancies without needing a scalpel or a tissue biopsy.
Exactly. The technology is phenomenal, but widespread clinical application seems to be hitting a bottleneck. Wait, isn't medicine standardized? Shouldn't every highly advanced medical laboratory be using the exact same protocol to find cancer DNA?
You think so?
I mean, if I get a standard metabolic panel or cholesterol test, the numbers mean the same thing everywhere.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to recognize that detecting microscopic fragments of mutant DNA in a sea of normal DNA is vastly more complex than measuring a stable molecule like cholesterol.
So it's an apples and oranges thing.
Completely. Biology is messy, and more importantly, the technological evolution in genomics is moving much faster than our regulatory frameworks. Because the tech is constantly iterating, there is a severe lack of standardized plug-and-play protocols.
I see.
Yeah, very few of these plasma-based ctDNA detection assays have formal FDA approval or European CE marking for broad clinical use.
I'm trying to visualize what that means on the ground. If there isn't a universally approved machine that laboratories can just buy and turn on, how are they actually performing these tests for patients? Are they essentially MacGyvering these critical diagnostic machines?
In a sense, yes. The industry term is laboratory developed tests, or LDTs. They're assays that are built in-house.
Built in-house, wow.
Right. Most of the chemical reagents and sequencing machines are currently categorized by manufacturers as research use only. So a highly skilled molecular pathology laboratory uses their own expertise to build custom workflows.
So they're putting the pieces together themselves.
Exactly. They piece together different DNA extraction kits, they optimize their own chemical washes, and they calibrate their own sequencing machines to get the job done.
Which introduces an enormous amount of human choice into a process we assume is rigidly automated.
It really does.
And this leads us directly to the core of this deep dive. The researchers recognized this variability and essentially designed the ultimate scientific sting operation to measure the fallout. They wanted to see what happens when you stress test this decentralized system.
They engineered a comprehensive external quality assessment, or EQA. They needed to bypass theoretical debates and just look at hard data. So they sent identical blinded samples out to 16 different Dutch laboratories that routinely perform these liquid biopsies.
But finding artificial DNA in a pristine test tube isn't the same as finding it in the chaotic environment of human plasma. How did they ensure the samples actually mimicked the real-world challenge?
That is where the study design shines. They sent two distinct categories of samples. First, they used three commercial reference plasma samples. Think of these as highly controlled laboratory products. The manufacturers take clean plasma and spike in precise amounts of mutated DNA. They engineered variant allele frequencies, or VFs, ranging from exactly 0% as a negative control up to just 1%.
Let me stop and make sure we are clear on variant allele frequency. If we are talking about a 1% VAF, we mean that out of all the thousands of DNA fragments floating in that specific sample, only 1 in 100 carries the cancer mutation.
Exactly.
The other 99 are perfectly healthy, normal DNA fragments from the patient's regular cells.
That is the exact mathematical challenge. It requires an incredibly sensitive assay to spot that single mutant fragment without being blinded by the 99 healthy ones. But as you pointed out, commercial spike samples are a bit too clean.
Right.
They don't have the complex proteins and fragmented structures found in a real patient. So the researchers introduced the second category, which were real patient-derived diagnostic leukapheresis plasma samples.
Diagnostic leukapheresis. Let's call them DLA samples to keep it simple. These came directly from patients diagnosed with advanced non-small cell lung cancer.
Yeah, and the reason they use leukapheresis is purely logistical, but brilliant.
How so?
Leukapheresis involves passing a patient's blood through a specialized centrifuge machine that skims off a large volume of plasma and mononuclear cells, and then returns the red blood cells to the body.
Oh, wow. So they get a lot of material.
Yes. This allowed the researchers to safely harvest an enormous volume of cancerous plasma from a single patient. They needed that massive volume so they could divide it into identical standardized aliquots to ship to all 16 labs.
So every lab opens a package containing the exact same biological puzzle.
Right.
Their mission was to find mutations in three specific gene regions heavily implicated in lung cancer and other malignancies. That's BRAF exon 15, EGFR exons 18 through 21, and KRAS exons 2 and 3. Just to translate the molecular geography for a second, when we say exon, we are basically talking about a specific chapter in the DNA instruction manual.
That's a perfect analogy.
And the laboratories are looking for spelling errors within those specific chapters.
Exactly. Yeah. They are hunting for single letter typos, missing sentences, or duplicated paragraphs within those crucial chapters.
Now remember the baking analogy. Here is where we enter the Wild West of laboratory workflows. The researchers tracked exactly how each lab attempted to isolate and read those chapters. Out of 16 labs, they utilized 8 completely different DNA extraction methods.
And the extraction phase is critical. You are attempting to separate fragile microscopic DNA fragments from a thick soup of proteins, lipids, and cellular debris. It is harsh chemistry.
And it gets more variable from there. They didn't even start with the same amount of plasma.
No, they didn't.
The input volume going into the machines varied between 2 and 4 milliliters. But the part that really caught my attention was the elution volume.
Ah, yeah.
At the very end of the extraction process, you have to wash the purified DNA off a filter using a liquid buffer. The labs used elution volumes ranging wildly from 25 microliters all the way to 200 microliters.
A huge spread.
I'm trying to process the chemistry here. If I have the same tiny amount of purified DNA, but I wash it off the filter with 200 microliters instead of 25, I'm radically diluting the final product. It's an 8-fold difference in concentration.
Right.
Why would a lab willingly dilute a sample when they are hunting for a microscopic 1% signal?
It is a calculated trade-off. If a laboratory washes the DNA into a larger volume, say 200 microliters, they have more physical liquid to work with. This allows them to run multiple different tests, or keep some in the freezer as a backup.
Oh, I see.
But the penalty is severe dilution. If you wash it into just 25 microliters, the DNA is highly concentrated, maximizing the chance that your sequencing machine will actually suck up the mutated fragment, but you might only have enough liquid to run a single test. There's no universal standard for which trade-off is correct.
And that leads directly to the analytical tools used to actually read the DNA. The labs deployed 10 totally different methodologies.
10 of them.
Yeah. Some use single-target droplet digital PCR, or ddPCR. Some use small panel PCRs, like the COBUS system, and others use massive, broad, next-generation sequencing, or NGS panels.
You can visualize these three analytical methods, like different types of search parties. Droplet digital PCR is like sending out a highly trained bloodhound given one exact scent. It is incredibly sensitive and fast, but it only finds the specific mutation you program it to look for.
What about the small panel PCRs?
That operates more like a standard police lineup. It can interrogate the sample for a few dozen common suspects very efficiently.
Okay, and NGS.
Finally, next-generation sequencing is like casting a massive dragnet across the entire city. It sequences millions of DNA fragments simultaneously to find anything out of the ordinary. It gives you a massive amount of data, but because it is looking at so much noise, the analysis becomes highly complex. What's fascinating here is how these varying workflows actually performed under pressure when looking at the exact same blood. On the surface, if you just glance at the top-line data, the system appears functional. 13 of the 16 labs, that is 81%, hit a 100% overall detection rate for finding something abnormal in the samples.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Finding something abnormal isn't the same as knowing exactly what you found. The real problem the study exposed wasn't finding the mutations, it was accurately identifying them.
Exactly. The detailed genotyping, the exact spelling of the mutation, failed across the board for several critical, actionable targets.
I want to break down these statistics because we need to translate these numbers into human stakes. Let's look at a specific genetic typo called an EGFR deletion, specifically the S752 to I759 deletion.
Okay.
Going back to our book analogy, this is where a specific sentence has been ripped out of the chapter. That exact deletion was completely missed or misidentified by 69% of the participating laboratories.
It's really concerning.
Think about that for a second. Imagine 10 patients walking into a clinic with this specific lung cancer mutation. 7 of them will be sent home with a generic chemotherapy plan because their lab simply couldn't spot the deletion, while the other 3 get a life-saving targeted pill. That is the reality of a 69% failure rate.
The variation is staggering. And the pattern held true for other complex mutations. An EGFR duplication where a sentence is accidentally copied twice was missed by 50% of the labs.
I'm looking at the KRAS mutation data, and I'm a bit lost. Mm-hmm. I know KRAS is a massive driver in cancer, but the specific call for the KRAS G12C mutation was only reported 33 out of a possible 64 times across the samples, meaning it was missed 48% of the time.
Right.
We were talking about a single letter variation, this C at the end. Why does missing one specific letter cause such a catastrophic clinical failure? Biologically, what changes?
This raises an important question, and it is the crux of modern personalized medicine. Why does the exact spelling matter so much? The targeted therapies we use today are not broad-spectrum poisons like traditional chemotherapy.
Yeah.
They are engineered molecules designed like highly specific keys for very specific molecular locks on the surface of the cancer cell.
So how does that lock and key physics apply to that C in the KRAS mutation?
Well, if a lab's workflow isn't robust and they just report a generic KRAS G12 mutation without specifying that it is exactly a G12C mutation, the clinical interpretation halts. The patient likely receives nonspecific chemotherapy.
Wow.
But if the lab specifically identifies the G12C variant, it proves that the cancer cell has a unique physical pocket on its surface. That specific pocket unlocks access to incredibly effective targeted therapies, drugs like Sotrovimab or Adagrasib.
And those are specific to that pocket.
Exactly. These pills are chemically engineered to bind exclusively to the unique shape created by that C mutation, shutting down the cancer cell's growth signal. If the lab misses the C, the doctor doesn't prescribe the drug.
I want to apply that lock and key logic to the EGFR gene failures we discussed earlier. The study showed half the labs missed a specific EGFR exon 20 insertion. If an insertion physically changes the shape of the receptor, is that like someone changing the locks on a door?
Yes.
The old key, a standard drug like osimertinib, just won't fit into the keyhole anymore.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it. Common EGFR mutations respond beautifully to osimertinib, but an exon 20 insertion changes the lock. Osimertinib becomes completely useless.
So what do they do?
Those patients require a radically different approach, like a targeted antibody therapy called amivantamab, which binds to the outside of the cell differently. If your lab's workflow dilutes the DNA too much, or the sequencing machine can't differentiate between a standard deletion and a complex insertion, you will be prescribed the wrong drug.
I want to talk about how these machines are failing to read the spelling. We saw one lab in particular, Lab 4, which used a broad next-generation sequencing approach perform terribly due to massive false negative and nonspecific calls.
Right, Lab 4.
I always assumed NGS was the gold standard, you know, the ultimate dragnet. How does a massive multi-million-dollar NGS sequencer fail to find a mutation that a simpler PCR test picks up?
It comes down to bioinformatics. An NGS machine doesn't spit out a clean, easily readable sentence. It generates a massive data dump of millions of fragmented, overlapping puzzle pieces.
Okay.
The laboratory has to use complex bioinformatics software pipelines to computationally stitch those tiny reads together against a reference genome. If the software's algorithm is calibrated to be too strict, perhaps, to avoid false alarms, it might throw away real cancer puzzle pieces, resulting in a false negative.
And if it's too loose?
If the algorithm is too loose, it forces the wrong pieces together, mistaking background sequencing errors for cancer, which is a false positive. Lab 4's bioinformatic pipeline was likely miscalibrated for the specific types of complex insertions and deletions present in the samples.
This is the ultimate verdict of this deep dive. Divergent pre-analytical choices, like elution volume, combined with differing analytical bioinformatic algorithms, literally lead to discrepant clinical outcomes using the exact same blood. But looking closely at the paper, there's a massive real-world caveat we have to address. The DLA samples used in this sting operation were from advanced stage patients.
Yes. Because they came from advanced disease, those plasma samples had incredibly high tumor DNA fractions. The variant allele frequencies were ranging from 1.6% all the way up to 9.3%.
So they were playing on easy mode.
Essentially, yes.
If they failed this badly with a billboard-sized signal of 9%, what happens when the signal is just a whisper?
That is the chilling implication. For early-stage cancer screening or monitoring minimal residual disease after a surgical tumor removal, the fraction of cancer DNA might be 0.1% or lower. The signal-to-noise ratio is exponentially worse.
Wow.
And at those microscopic levels, you run headfirst into a phenomenon known as biological noise.
Explain that biological noise. What is interfering with the signal?
The primary culprit is something called clonal hematopoiesis of indeterminate potential, or CHIP. As we age, the stem cells in our bone marrow naturally acquire random benign mutations. They aren't cancer, but they are genetically abnormal.
Okay.
These stem cells pump out millions of white blood cells carrying these mutations, and as those white blood cells naturally die, they shed their mutated DNA into the blood plasma.
So your own aging immune system is basically throwing off decoy DNA that looks identical to tumor DNA.
Precisely. If your lab protocol isn't incredibly standardized with specialized bioinformatic filters, a highly sensitive NGS machine will detect a CHIP mutation in the plasma and flag it as a cancer recurrence.
Which is terrifying.
It is. That is a false positive that could lead to devastating, unnecessary chemotherapy. Conversely, the sheer volume of CHIP background noise can drown out the real low-level cancer signal, giving a false negative. The fact that the COIAN consortium showed labs struggling to accurately genotype these samples when the signal was loud and clear strongly suggests that real-world clinical errors on low-signal samples are likely significantly higher.
It really paints a picture of a diagnostic landscape that is incredibly powerful, capable of mapping the molecular drivers of disease from a simple blood draw, but one that is currently resting on a very fragile, unstandardized foundation. We have the chemistry, but the harmonization is lagging severely behind.
The fundamental science is sound. But until we treat the entire workflow from the volume of the blood draw to the extraction chemistry to the exact parameters of the bioinformatic software as a single standardized medical device, we will continue to see these discrepancies.
So what does this all mean?
Liquid biopsies possess the power to fundamentally revolutionize cancer care. But this deep dive proves that the technology remains highly vulnerable to everyday workflow variations. Until the global medical community forces standardization across every single step, from the physical blood draw to the digital algorithmic analysis, patients risk receiving wildly different treatment plans based solely on which laboratory happens to process their sample.
Absolutely.
What does this mean for the future of global oncology standardization, and how can we trust our diagnostics in an era of personalized medicine?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science. bass by bass.
Late night lab lights, a quiet hum in the air. A vial of plasma, hope hanging on a prayer. We chase a signal in a river running thin. If the steps don't match, we can't read what's within. Measure by measure, the smallest trace. One misturn and it fades from the page. We need one language for what we see. So every result sets the right heart free. Same blood, same truth. Let it ring, let it rise. Light it up, lock it in. Make it clear for the eyes. Don't let the answer slip through the cracks. Ooh. We can't see. When the workflow sings in harmony. Same blood, same truth. Set the rhythm, set the proof. Hey. Oh, oh, oh. Yeah. Different hands, different kits, different volumes in play. Yield goes up or it vanishes drifting away. Some can't spark the shadow.